Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. A lot of people trying to get rid of a lot of things at this time of year, mainly colds and flus and various other ailments. Anne Tyrrell, Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
What are you trying to get rid of?
I am trying to safely get rid of a whole lot of supplements, health supplements that have piled up in my closets over the past few years. And I am not having any luck at finding somewhere that will help me safely dispose of them.
And what type of health supplements are you referring to, Anne?
Things like high dosage vitamins, mineral supplements, various, I'd have to go and look at the names, but a whole lot of stuff I was recommended to take when I was trying to heal an autoimmune issue that I have.
But recommended by whom?
Recommended by the people that I was working with, naturopaths.
My point is, let's be clear. Are these prescription medicines? Were these prescribed by
a
qualified
doctor? These are not prescriptive medicines. They are what are known as natural supplements. So they would be products that I would have purchased from health food shops or that type of business rather than from a chemist.
And are they the type of products that are not on sale in a chemist?
I've seen them on sale in some chemists. It's just that I know there's a greater range and variety in various health food shops that I would be inclined to shop at. And
why are you getting rid of them? Because it didn't work?
Oh Lord, no! I'm getting rid of them because I now have a really good handle on my managing my health issue. But I had bought lots of these at the time because they were what I was told to get by the various people that I was working with. And now they're sitting in my closet and I've nowhere to put them because I don't want to throw them in the bin because I don't know where they end up.
Well, what's in them? What's in these things? What is in them? I thought it was just mostly sugar or whatever. Is there anything in them that would endanger anybody? Hopefully not.
Well, hopefully not indeed. But the point is that when you're taking high dosages of vitamin supplements and things, if a lot of them are being put into the land or the water source or whatever, you know, I mean, some people, I imagine, may flush them down the toilet. Some people may put them into their food garbage. I don't know what happens to food garbage or where it goes even. But, you know, you're talking, I mean, there are an awful lot of health food shops. There are an awful lot of shops.
It's big. It's a multi-billion, dollar industry, health food shops.
I'm aware that I have quite a stock of stuff that I want to get rid of, but I'm pretty sure that an awful lot of other people do too. So if you're constantly putting that kind of stuff into a landfill, I don't believe that it is a very good idea, particularly if it's, you know, going to somehow end up getting back into the land or through the land back into the
water. Did you go back to these numerous health food shops and say?
I have contacted a few of my local health food shops and none of them had any idea of disposal. One person, I mean, I'm not going to mention any names or anything because all they were doing was giving me their advice. And one of them suggested that I just put them into the food bin. But they didn't have any, they weren't aware of any system.
Well,
to
what
get
are
rid.
Okay, let's 51551, by the way, and joe@rt.ie. And what are the ingredients in these so called health supplements that you're worried about getting rid of?
I'd have to look at the bottles, but I mean, you know, one of them had quite a bit of lithium in it, one of them, which is, you know, that was for
sale over the counter in a health food shop.
Yeah, it's lithium orate. You know, you can. It's probably okay. Small doses, but you still, you know, when you get a concentration of anything,
yeah,
you know,
I know,
and you're
that's
somewhere.
Why I agree, and that's why pharmacists especially are very keen for people to bring back prescribed tablets that they're not using or are finished with, or when you talk to pharmacists and you say, why are you so? And by the way, they're not getting anywhere because there is no scheme in Ireland for taking back any medicine, be it so-called health supplements or prescribed medicine or medicine that you buy over the counter in a qualified pharmacy. But one of the reasons when they say, why over the years when you'd interview pharmacists, why are you so keen? And they say, because we do not want product in a house that can be dangerous taking in even small quantity, such as sleeping tablets, codeine or whatever. So they're worried about accidental death or death by suicide or whatever. But you ain't going to kill yourself with a few bottles of quack health supplements.
Well, I don't know the full science behind it, but I know that if you overdose on quite a number of minerals or vitamins, that they will definitely have side effects. They are not.
Okay, nobody wants you doing that. But if you overdose on codeine or sleeping tablets or paracetamol, you're in big, big trouble. You're in big, big trouble. By the way, pharmacists. See, anyway, I'll give you the HSE statement, which I do at the beginning of every program now since we came back on the 2nd of January. Every live line begins with a statement from the HSE saying. Anyway, I'll get to it and say I'll go over a statement with a very reputable scientist, and that's Dara O'Brien. I don't know whether you're familiar with Dara O'Brien, the comedian, but he's also a qualified mathematician. Yeah, and a scientist, and he rails against these herbal medicines, so-called, and health supplements. And I was watching him there over the weekend, and there's loads of YouTube videos of him. He does a part of his act. He said, I'm sorry, herbal medicine and other so-called cures have been around for thousands of years. We tested them, and those that worked are now medicines. Those that didn't work are not medicines. So I'm just... So then I'll move on to what you say your health food shop won't take them, so you can hardly expect your pharmacist to take them, can you?
Well, I didn't assume that.
I know. Sorry, I'm speaking generally. One wouldn't expect. This is what the HSE say, Anne, because you have hidden air fear. People can. This is for kind of prescribed medicines. People can. I thought there was a system where you could get back your prescribed medicines. There isn't, apparently. People can check with their pharmacy to see if they accept unused or unwanted medicines, or check with their local civic amenity site to see if they accept this type of waste. Poisons.ie, wow, what a title. Poisons.ie and the HPRA might have information too, or you could try the IPU or the EPA. The IPU is the Irish Pharmaceutical Union. There's more acronyms in this. The EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency. Sometimes local dump, another acronym, dispose of unused medicines properly campaigns. I've never heard of that. Have you? Sometimes local.
Well, certainly, I called my local landfill.
Well done. Well done. And how? What did they say?
They were the first people I contacted, and they said no, they have absolutely nothing for that.
Okay, so you have hit on something here. What do people do?
Oh, I'm aware of it because I have a cupboard full of stuff I want to get rid of, and it's not just, you know, the health supplement bottles. I also, you know, like, a couple of years ago, we were in Spain or Portugal, and my husband got an extremely bad burn, and they gave us some kind of a cream. Now, in Spain and Portugal, you don't need a prescription to get certain things. So I don't know if this particular stuff had anything to do with needing or requiring a prescription in any other country. But they gave it to us because it was quite severe. And I have a bottle of this or a tube of this stuff.
Well, that'd be
I have no idea what's in it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put that anywhere because it's like, what on earth is in it?
So your worry is, now you're saying one health food shopper, no, I don't know, one said put them in your food waste bin, which we all know.
Yeah, well, I contacted a couple of places, yeah. But one particular girl just sort of said, oh, well, would you not put it in the waste bin? And
your worry, you know, is I'm legitimate. Where does that go? And does that go into the water table, for example?
Or does it go back into compost, or where does it, you know?
Yeah,
does
who
it
eats? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does it go? Where does it go? Like, does it end up back in the food chain? Does it end up back, even in a roundabout way, back in the food chain? Which, you know,
yeah,
years and years
point,
ago, I lived
point.
In the States, and I used to get really ill, and I had no idea what was wrong, and I discovered that it was from hormone in the beef, and I had to stop. When I finally figured out what it was, I had to stop eating beef completely. And it took me years, even when I came back to Ireland, to eat beef again, because I was so afraid of the results. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and by the way, our pharmacists we contact say it there's no scheme in place. It costs us to get rid of, we have to pay to get rid of unwanted product. And therefore, it's up to each pharmacist to decide whether they will accept unused or unwanted medicines. So there's no government scheme. Even though we get these
advertisements. But surely it should be something to do with the pharmaceutical companies having some way of disposing of
them. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they should all put 2% in or whatever. But maybe it should be the same for all these health food supplement shops, whatever they're called.
Oh, no, I agree. Well,
okay, I think you've hit on something here, Anne, both in terms of the homeopathic stuff or the health food stuff. Which is there is a debate whether it has any effect. So if it doesn't have any effect, well, then what's the danger? Dennis Murray. Dennis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
So vitamin D, vitamin D is prescribed by a lot of doctors, either in tablet form or in liquid form.
As I said in my email, I lost consciousness in 2012 and haven't had multiple tests. The one thing that was identified was I was deficient in vitamin D.
Okay.
Now, prior to that, as I said, I would have been very low mood in the winter time.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I would have got cramps in my hands.
Okay.
I don't have any of that now.
Brilliant. And who? Tell us about the vitamin. Was it a doctor or a hospital that prescribed?
It was a doctor following tests. The doctor referred me for different tests.
Yeah.
Blood tests and for a scan.
And you were deficient vitamin D.
Recommended.
And what was recommended? What form of vitamin D?
Take a high-strength vitamin D, vitamin D3. And that's what I've taken, and I'm taking for the past 13 years.
And where do you...
I buy it in a pharmacy.
Okay.
And I take it between September and April until the sunshine comes out again.
Exactly. And it's recommended for Irish people because of our lack of sunshine. But the vitamin D was recommended or prescribed by a qualified medic who told you to get it in a pharmacy.
Yes.
And do you need a prescription for the amount you need? Or it's just...
No, I don't need a prescription.
Okay, because there's capsules available in pharmacies, isn't there?
Yes.
Which have all been tested and...
My understanding is now they give it to children in hospitals in Scotland at time of birth in liquid format. And also Scotland carried out research during COVID and they found that people who had high levels of vitamin D had stronger immune systems and were better able to fight COVID without the need to go to hospital.
Okay, but vitamin D, initially, were you recommended it in capsule form or were you recommended there's a small little vial you get, a little drink which you mix? It's almost like a syrup.
In capsule form.
Capsule form, okay. And is it expensive, Dennis?
It comes out around €60 for about 100 capsules.
And were you ever tempted, because it is, I don't think I've ever been into one of those health food shops, but they do advertise. Have you ever been tempted to look at what's available in a health food shop or a health supplement shop?
No, I buy them in the pharmacy. I haven't gone then, so I buy them in the pharmacy.
Okay, and there is people can look at the amount of vitamin D and the pharmacists. We all know all pharmacists and indeed their assistants, but all pharmacists are qualified. It's a 7-year course, and we know we're dealing with somebody who's not trying to sell us A, B, C, or D because of the margin, but they do know what they're talking about. So it does make a difference, Dennis.
Well, for me, I don't get cramps in my hands. I don't get that excruciating pain after writing or holding a pen afterwards. I don't feel the tiredness at wintertime, and I haven't lost consciousness since. I was driving at the time I went off the road Luckily, I ended up in a ditch and I didn't cause an injury to anybody else, but I could have.
Yeah, because one texter is saying if the product is covered on the DPA, you know, the drugs refund scheme, and one caller is saying there, I see that her vitamin D is covered on the drugs refund. You know, you only send you spend a certain amount and you don't go beyond that. So vitamin D is mm-hmm. recognised medically as having that effect. So if you're told to keep the drugs payment scheme, if you're told to keep taking it, Dennis.
Well, I wouldn't change given the benefits I've achieved over the past number of years.
Okay. And you said what, you fell unconscious at the steering wheel of a car?
While driving, yes. I just went right off the road and into a ditch. Wow. Luckily, it was on a back road.
And did you feel it coming on you, Dennis?
No, I didn't at the time, no.
Wow. Just out of the blue, you blackout or whatever you call it, and then they did all the tests, and then they said you're deficient in vitamin D. Obviously very deficient.
But that was the only thing they could come up with at the end. I went to Aphidia and had brain scanned. I had multiple tests, blood tests,
course,
and everything
else.
And the one thing they came up with in the end was that I was deficient in vitamin D. The thing about it was the cramps in my hand and that feeling of stiffness and tiredness in the wintertime. I don't have any of that now and I'm 13 years older.
Brilliant. And you remember waking up in the ditch, Dennis?
Yeah, I do then, but that was it. But, you know, my whole focus at that time then was just upon getting the vehicle back home and getting myself back home.
Okay.
And then I went to my GP.
But you must have got a terrible fright.
Look for tests. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay, good to
hear. But equally to say that vitamin D is good, important for women, because women are more prone to get scoliosis, a curvature of the spine. And
calcium. And I think most people these days do take the word of their pharmacist. When they go in and the pharmacist says, well, if I'm pregnant or whatever, what should I be taking? And they're full of reliable information. OK, Dennis, thanks indeed. Dennis Murray, stay with us, Anne and Terrell. Joe, we're talking about how do you get rid of unwanted medicines. Prescribed medicines are obviously very powerful because they are prescribed. And over-the-counter medicines in pharmacies that are qualified are obviously quite powerful as well. So how do you get rid of them? No pharmacist obliged to take them back, by the way. And then Anne is making the point she has a lot of supplements she bought in health food shops and creams, in fairness, for burns. How did she get rid of them? joe@rt.ie, 51551 is the text number, and 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie, I'm reading a piece by Professor Will Molloy, who's Professor of Medicine Emeritus, University College Cork, Consultant Geriatrician Health Service Executive, and numerous other. He says, a simple strategy in terms of vitamin D, he's recommending, and vitamin D is recommended. It's not as regarded as a homeopathic supplement. It is a proven medical intervention. And Professor Molloy says, I recommend about 1,000 IU daily or 2,500 international units monthly. Basically what he's saying is if you're interested in vitamin D, go into a pharmacy and see what they recommend, and they know what the recommended dose is. Mark Fearon, I mentioned codeine and salpidine, and Mark, we hear so many ads about this. You were 3 years addicted to codeine, over the counter medicines.
I was, yeah, true. It was Nurofen Plus, which I was taking, and I started off taking it innocently to treat some back pain which I had. And then I kind of continued it because the back pain was still there.
Okay.
And then after a few months, I was like, oh, why am I still taking these? My back is better. And that's when I figured out I couldn't stop.
And where were you getting them?
From the pharmacies, from many, many pharmacies. And I said, as time went on, my use went on, and it got worse and it got worse.
But pharmacists are told, anyone who tries to buy Zolpidem or Nurofen Plus or these codeine tablets are told that they're not interrogated, but they're asked a few questions, Andy, for your own use. Use for no more than 3 days. Be very, very careful. So how did you get over that hurdle?
Yeah, no, and it's totally right that they asked those questions. But just, as I said, I just ignore those warnings.
How did you get over the pharmacist counter, so to speak?
I just, as I visited various pharmacies, like I never went to the same pharmacy, in a week, I'd spread it out.
And were you ever refused?
I figured out in my 3 years of addiction that got up to 3 packs a day, that's 72 tablets. I figured out that I visited in or around 2,000 pharmacies. I was refused once. Just once.
Okay, and what was, tell me how that refusal was worded.
Just that they just said that they weren't selling them. They didn't flat out say that we're not giving them to you, but they just said that we just don't have them for sale.
Okay. And at the other 2,000 pharmacies you went to satisfy your 72 tablets a day need addiction, none of them were sold out?
No, like the odd time there might have been something sold out, but generally, I was never told, no, like you can't have them, as I said, apart from that one time. But it was something which I didn't want to be doing. I knew after 6 months that I had a serious problem. And I remember going, like, what do I do here? I was so ashamed of it. I didn't know what to do. Okay. So I kept it a secret. But I went online to try and find, what do I do to get some help? And I really couldn't find anything. So I just went, you know what, I'm going to tackle this myself. I'll just reduce the level down that I'm taking, and I'll do it that way. But month by month went by, turned into years, and I got myself to a position where I had to go to the GP. I knew I was dying. I got to a really, really bad position.
Wow.
I let my stomach was in pieces. I was vomiting blood. I was like, anyone who saw me just went, you look extremely unwell. So I eventually had to go to my GP and come clean and said, I'm in a bad way. I didn't need to say to him, he could see it. But then I told him, I know why. It's because I'm having huge amounts of Nurofen Plus daily, and it's killing me. So I had to go in straight away for a blood transfusion for scopes to try and repair the damage on it. I was put on codeine-only tablets by prescription from the doctor and put on a tapering program. But as the levels got lower, I really struggled. Turned out the only course to really fix this, to battle this, was to go into inpatient care. So I went into St. Patrick's Hospital in Dublin for 7 weeks.
Okay, the psychiatric hospital and absolute youth sensation there. How did you pay for all of this, Mark? 3 packets of Nurofen Plus every day, 7 days a week, 365, is not cheap.
No, it's not. And it's now, don't get me wrong, it wasn't 3 packs every day, because like that, I mean, I couldn't afford it. But it was up to that. So my life kind of revolved around it. And I hated it that it did. I really did. But I was keeping it a secret as well. And it was just... Yeah, just like physically, mentally, it was destroying me, absolutely destroying me. And I just didn't know what to do.
You a functioning codeine addict? In other words, were you walking, as they say, outside the home?
It was a good question. And I only properly realised the answer to that question once I was in St. Patrick's and started to come down off the codeine. I presumed that it was fine. It wasn't really affecting me all that much. I had this problem. But as my clarity started to come back, once the levels of codeine was being reduced in my body, I didn't realize how much it had changed me as a person, how it had changed my personality. I'd gone from being someone who enjoyed being social, being out, being like enjoying life, to somebody hiding away at home. And just like so ashamed of it that I just found it hard to face people. But I still got on with my life, you know, and I battled it, but it wasn't, I wasn't the person I should have been, okay. You know, so, yeah.
The withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah. They weren't pleasant. They really weren't. And see, because I built my levels up so high of it, it was a tricky thing to come down with, and something I needed help. And that's what I got in St. Patrick's, because it was round the clock care. Because what they do is they'd on the codeine only tablets, and then they'd reduce it, and then they'd level it off, and they'd reduce it. So every time there was the reduction, I just got these really, really bad withdrawals, where I just have incredible aches and pains in all my limbs. I couldn't sleep, just agitated, felt out the flu. It really wasn't pleasant, and something I would never let myself go through again. It was bad. But it was bad, but it can be done, you know, and that's the great thing here.
And did your family, you say the doctor knew, but by the time you decided to go to a GP, but did anyone else notice in your daily life, Mark, that you had this addiction?
Yeah, but nobody once suspected that I was addicted to codeine. It's not something you'd expect. I tried my best to hide it, but people could see that my energy levels and I just wasn't as social. I wasn't around as much. So people did, but they didn't. They didn't realise why, because you just wouldn't, I suppose. It's not something that's really talked about. And that's why I didn't, like, as I wish I told somebody years beforehand, I really do, it would have made it be fixed. But I was just so ashamed of it, I felt I had to keep it a secret, and I had to beat it myself, but it was just never going to work, ever.
And Mark, to go back to Anne Tyrrell's point at the start of the programme, 51551 is the text number, she was making the point, what do I do with all these unused health supplements that I bought in these health shops? What do I do with them? Now, again, I know it's debated. Well, it's not really debated. There's no real evidence that a lot of them actually have any power, thank God. But what we know, buying stuff in a chemist and getting stuff on prescription obviously has power. Were you not worried about the Nurofen Plus lying around the house if there was other people in the house?
No. I had them hidden. I had them hidden like that.
So you had the outward and inward symptoms of an addict, you were hiding stuff.
Completely. I said, because I was so ashamed of it. I really was. And I didn't know how to go about fixing it. I just thought I could do it myself. This was a hidden addiction, which I think so many are, but I worked so hard to keep it that way. Again, because I thought I could beat it myself. I'll take care of this.
But am I right in saying you have beaten it?
Yeah, well, no, I won't say I'm beaten it, because I'm still on my recovery plan. So I think that will be there forever. But I am in such a good place. I came out of St. Patrick's feeling like I hadn't felt in years. I always thought codeine was making me feel good, was making me like that I needed it. And it's only that I'm off it. I never felt this good on codeine. Not once, not even close to how good I feel now. And that's why I wanted to go public with my story, because there's so little out there. Yeah. Honest, people are ashamed of it. People don't talk about it. And I went, you know what? If I had some kind of information years before this became a real, real problem, I would have been able to get it fixed. I would have known what to do. I would have known where to go. I would have known that I can't do it myself. So I decided to go public. I decided to put it on to TikTok, onto Instagram, put it out there, put my story out there. Yeah. It was a big
Mark,
decision.
Was it exhausting being an addict? The stress, the worry, the hiding, the getting ready to go into a different pharmacy, hopefully you're not spotted or whatever.
It sounds
like a full-time job.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, like, every day I'd have to decide, like, where I could go to my pharmacies, where I could get it, how I'd get it. It became, like, the massive part of my life. Like a massive, massive part, you know, and I just, and then also having to talk to the pharmacist, you know, and, you know, it wasn't pleasant to go through that. And like, I never give out. Never like, as in the pharmacies, they're like it's right that people are asked about.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think, like, I really think it's something that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, but exactly, you took the because, in fairness to the pharmacies and the pharmacy assistants, they are. This is the formative words they're given, and they. But there's no law. There's no law saying you can't buy Salbutamol or Nurofen Plus without a prescription. Now, I know that is debatable. That is open for debate as well. But there is no law, so the pharmacists can't say, "Oh, we've none in stock," and hopefully that would satisfy the customer. But if the customer sees 24 Nurofen Plus on the shelf behind the pharmacist, they can say, "Will you have it in stock? Why won't you give it to me?" And the law is very. It's in pencil. It's not exactly in ink. The Salbutamol is not banned. And in fact, in Ireland, there are the Irish Pharmacy Union say there are 15 different brands that are sold over the counter that have codeine. And now they say. In 2020, not they say, the HSE say, in 2023, 408 people received treatment, including counseling for codeine as a main or additional drug of addiction in Ireland. But when you look at the sales in Ireland, the recent population of Ireland, I think it's around 5 million, there is a pack of Salbutamol sold for every man, woman and child in Ireland. There was 4.53, this is the last stats available, 4.53 million packs of these codeine-containing over-the-counter tablets sold in 20... It's a big business. Sold in 2021. I think they're actually manufactured in Dungarvan in Ireland. Behind South Africa, Ireland sold the second highest amount of over-the-counter codeine medicines in the 6 years from 2013 to 2019. According to an Oxford University-led analysis of sales in 31 countries. Australia reclassified codeine and codeine tablets to prescription only in 2018. Now, would you recommend that, or would you say people just have to be more aware of the HSE, in fairness, say, OK, we sold 4.3 million packets, but 408 people in 2023... which is 408 people too many, but they received treatment. So would it be proportionate and consequential to say codeine products should be prescription only, Mark? Insofar as, I don't have to burden you with that decision, but what would your opinion be?
Well, my opinion, and the first thing to say is, to say they treated 400 people, it is. There are so many more people with this problem than 400 people. And I know that from the amount of private messages I'm getting. This is way bigger problem than 400 people.
Okay.
I 100% think that it should be put onto prescription or onto something that it's linked to your PPS number, something that you're limited to a packet a month. Because there are people who need it. And it is a good painkiller. But it's an opiate. Like, it's in the same family as heroin. You know, like, it's not something that should be over the counter that people can go and buy in whatever quantities they want from visiting different pharmacies. It's just, and most countries in the world, you can't do that. You know, so I definitely think something has to be done to regulate it, to stop it, because you won't believe the amount of people that are private messaging me asking for my advice what they should do.
What is your advice? Insofar as I'm qualified to give it, but
is that there's two things. First thing is to call your GP and make an appointment and go and tell them that you have a problem. That is the first step. That has to be the first step, that they can refer you on to somewhere else, and they can start take you off the Nurofen or the Salbutamol and get you onto codeine only, so you're not damaging your body as much, and they can start that tapering program. And that's something. I mean, I wish I'd done it sooner, but I waited 3 years. I was close to dying before I did that. And if I'd just done that beforehand, it would have been sorted so much easier. And then what I really find is just the power of talking, not to keep this to yourself. Talk to a friend, a family member, anybody.
And as you said earlier, still attending counselling, and it's an ongoing process. Stay with us, Mark. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number. Dr. Cathal O'Sullivan is in Blackrock in Dublin. Cathal, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you? Do you come across people who are dependent on over-the-counter tablets containing codeine, Cathal?
Yes, I do. But I think the number you quoted there, the 400 and something that are in the
408 according to HSE, yeah.
That's really the tip of the iceberg here.
Okay.
This is a huge problem.
Wow.
And the reason it's a huge problem is that it's hidden.
Yeah.
And as that last, I mean, I could write a little book on comments of what that last man,
Mark,
spoke about, and he's bang on all the time. He's right on the money. The problem with codeine dependence, he's right. It is like morphine and heroin, but the problem with it is that it's people. It's not your regular person that we think of as a heroin addict that becomes dependent on codeine. It's your normal working person who maybe has a pain problem and starts innocently, totally innocently, goes into the pharmacy and buys a packet of, as you said, those medication containing codeine, and they find it works really well and they feel very well, and they go back and they get another box. And unfortunately, the problem here is with both the pharmacy and the medical profession, because number one, the pharmacy, there are guidelines out there now for pharmacists to question patients who go in to buy codeine containing medications, right?
Yeah.
Now, I've gone into almost all the local pharmacies in my area to buy one of these products. They ask you usually three questions. The first one is, have you taken this? No, sorry, it's is this for yourself?
Yeah.
I say yes. Have you taken it before? Yes. And then the third question usually is, do you want a bag? I have never heard a pharmacist in Dublin mention the word dependence or addiction. And the reason I've asked pharmacists, why don't you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they tell me is that they don't want to alienate their customers, basically. Now, this is the answer I've got from them. I'm not saying that, you know, there are some pharmacists who won't sell it at all, who are very careful about it.
Okay.
But it's very, very easy. I can go into any pharmacy around this area and buy.
But would they know you as a medic, Cathal?
No.
Okay.
No, there are pharmacies I wouldn't be known in.
Okay, I understand that. Yeah. So
the
you
only
say,
place I've ever actually been heard anyone mention the word addiction or dependence was in Killarney when I went in with a colleague to show him how lax the whole system was. And I went in and I asked the pharmacist for one of these medications.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, you can become addicted to this. And he's the only person I've ever encountered.
Okay. And
so that's the root of the problem, really, I think.
And you also mentioned there that some pharmacists don't sell it. Is that it over the counter? Is that the answer, that it should be prescription only?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
I think this is a very useful analgesic painkiller.
Okay.
And I take it myself once or twice a year if I get a headache or something like that, a back pain. I might take a few tablets. But, you know, some people do seem to have a weakness for this, either genetic or psychological or whatever. But, you know, some people are open to opiate addiction.
Okay,
just as some people seem to be more open to alcohol, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like that. So, but those people need to be informed of what's happening. And as that man, I think, there said beforehand, if only I'd known what this was going to lead to, I would have been more careful. But nobody told him.
And the only
thing that I would like to correct him on is that GPs who don't have a specialist training in addiction can't prescribe the medication that are needed for treating opiate dependence.
Okay.
And it's recommended that we don't prescribe codeine.
Okay.
Pure codeine.
Okay.
Like codeine itself is a harmless drug outside of being dependent on it. But sorry.
But when you mix codeine, say in the products we were talking about, Nurofen plus Albidine, they're mixed with other products. Does that are they just
the other products are what cause you the problem? Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that, paracetamol what's in the other one? The
ibuprofen.
Okay.
The ibuprofen. Okay. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they're the ones that burn holes in your stomach and burn your kidneys out. And in fact, I have seen people, as that last caller described, on the verge of kidney collapse, liver, severe liver damage, because they come too late for treatment.
And when do they? When do? Insofar as you can't generalize, Carl. I'm totally. No. Aware of that. But do people wait until they have symptoms? What are the symptoms that I am addicted to codeine?
Well, as you well described it, I think when it starts to take over your life and when you have to travel to different pharmacies to buy your tablets and when you're taking, you know, I mean, I see people that are taking two boxes of these things, you know, 48 tablets a day.
My God.
A day, right? Okay. I don't know what the price of them are, but it must be a fairly expensive habit. It's probably more expensive now than heroin.
And, Carl, to go back to the initial caller, Anne Tyrrell, she was making the point, what do I do with all these unused health supplements I have in my cabinet? I'm heaving with them. I bought them in the health food shops. Have you
That's
any
my department, really, health food things.
Well, tell us, what do I do with unused? Are they dangerous? Yeah. That's not your. Sorry, you're saying it's not your department. That's what you're saying. Okay.
No.
Now, Cathal, you would have been aware that there isn't an end of use scheme in Ireland for prescription medicine. That pharmacists are not obliged to take unused.
Not obliged. Some will facilitate but not obliged. No, as far as I know.
But surely we should be encouraging people to get rid of these products out. They're so powerful and so dangerous. Power means danger as well.
I think you're talking about a completely different issue, though. You know, I don't see the relevance here to what we're talking about.
But I'm just going for the
opiate dependence to over-the-counter medication is a very sort of special area and a very serious problem. There's huge numbers. Like I said, there are 400 and something is the tip of the iceberg. The problem, as I see it, is that people aren't being given proper information. I think this is very good. You're putting this on your show and putting it out to the public.
Okay.
But I think that the regulations are recommendations. They are really, they're not regulations. I think they're not strong enough. And I don't think I don't think pharmacists, for whatever reason, not enough of them. Now, there are people I know that are implementing the recommendations, but not enough of them are actually mentioning the word addiction or dependence to their patients. A lot of doctors also, treating addiction, especially opiate addiction, is a fairly specialised piece of work.
Yeah, of course.
And a lot of regular GPs, if you go to them, they'll tell you, oh, well, just cut yourself down gradually and stop. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work as a rule. Okay. You have to really take it very, very slowly. You have to reduce your amounts over a long period of time.
Otherwise,
it's not possible, really, for most people to discontinue these drugs in you know, a month or 3 months or whatever. It usually takes longer than that.
And you should.
I think most doctors, GPs out there working, they're very busy. They're not involved in this area. And a lot of them, I think, don't have a great understanding of it.
But your initial point is that, what did you say, the 408, that the HSE people receiving treatment for codeine addiction, they say, as a main or additional drug in Ireland, you say that's just the tip of the iceberg in your
experience. Most definitely, yeah.
Okay. Dr. Cathal O'Sullivan, thanks indeed. And Mark Fearon, thank you so much, Mark. Thanks indeed, Mark. That's Mark Fearon.
No
Joe at rt.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, the new angle on the gig economy, and we all think of Uber and Deliveroo and various other... Deliveroo people, I think, are the ones that people feel most sympathy for. But one company in the UK that are heavily involved in the gig economy, believe it or not, the new system of payment they've introduced is if you want to be paid, like, promptly, this is if you're... Now, not, it's not Deliveroo, by the way, but if you want to be paid promptly by this particular company, you will take a reduction. You will give them 4% to be paid promptly. Otherwise, you'll wait a month. We thought they couldn't come up with any more nefarious ideas on the gig economy, but that's one of them. Joe Mellett, Joe, good afternoon. It's not about the gig economy, but it is about coffee and litter and what's happened. You're in Swinford, Joe.
Afternoon, Joe. Happy New Year.
You too. Many more of them.
Look at my thing is there that I've lived in Swinford all of my 74 years. I take pride in the town. I abhor litter. And mm-hmm. I'm a member of the Tidy Towns, and we're doing our best to, as well as this, make the town look well. Because the success or otherwise of a small town is how it is perceived and seen by visitors. And if towns like Swinford want to survive into the future, then the first thing it must do is keep it clean and tidy.
Okay. And what were you sent as a photograph? Pretty awful photograph.
Remember, Tidy Towns, I collect some of the empty, some of the litter bins in kind of off the road areas there. And I'm talking in particular to an area in the town here known as the Brabazon Park Walk. It's a 5 kilometre walk. Mm-hmm. Fabulous. So yesterday morning, as the photograph I sent you, one of the bins was full to overflowing with some maybe 40 coffee cups, empty coffee cups, and about 30 mutt mitts, which is dog bags, dog's excrement bags.
I see that, yeah.
So the question I'm asking is, all of those 40 cups there, they were brought to the area by 40 individual people.
Mm-hmm.
So they carry them from the town, either walking or in a car.
Oh, the litter bin is not beside a coffee outlet.
No, it's about 1 kilometre from it.
Okay.
So they carry them from the coffee outlet.
Okay.
Why wouldn't they bring them back, not to the coffee outlet, why don't they bring them home? Because you can reuse a coffee cup for a while. It won't last forever.
Yeah.
But why do they have to dump it in a scenic, a fabulous area, which we're all so proud of there.
And is that, by the way, Joe, is that a council bin or is it a...
No, no, it's provided by the Tidy Towns in the park.
Okay.
And the park is owned by and administered by the Tidy Town, by the...
Well, maybe do what Dublin City Council recommended in certain, the Bull Wall and that, is get rid of the litter bins altogether.
It's something that's actually... I certainly would be open to that advice. But what I'm asking, Joe, is there, is, and I'd respect your listeners' opinions there, is this is a new phenomenon, coffee and drive-in coffee places, and they're doing extremely well, and well done to them there. But why do people have to do what they do? Why don't they bring the coffee cup, as I say or said already, bring it home with them there? It's no big deal.
Maybe somebody
can answer that.
Yeah, but you hear so many people saying, "Well, I have my own coffee cup I bring with me, and I'm encouraged." And the coffee outlet, be it a horse box, a barn, a converted railway fire engine, or whatever, they'll give me 5 cent off if I hand in my own cup. Do people?
Is that not as widespread
as we thought, or only happens in the workplace?
It doesn't appear to be happening here now, and I'm not sure about any other towns. That's why I'd appreciate any feedback on it there. But I'm just saying is that...
So what
did your resolution?
What did you do, Joe? You emptied this bin, did you?
Oh, I had to get my Jeep and empty the bin. I do that because I like to do things for my own town. But it almost filled to the very top one of those industrial waste bags.
Yeah.
So there was a serious amount of stuff there.
Oh, I can see it here. I can see it here. It's completely... Now, some of these people need to just... One, which is not being facetious, now get a bigger bin or get rid of the bin, because the bin attracts rubbish, pardon the statement of the obvious.
That's right. But would people then indiscriminately throw them all over the place?
That's your big worry,
at least they're all in the one spot here.
Yeah, okay. Good point, yeah.
But again... Look, I go back to the days there where the original shopkeepers used to sweep outside their front doors.
That was
the first thing that was done every morning. And that's when the towns were looking well. Why have things changed? We're supposed to be very affluent, but we don't seem to be learning an awful lot.
Okay.
That's no offence to those people who do clean.
Yeah, of course.
But there are others who do not realise how unsightly throwing coffee cups on the ground is.
And then we hear, what was one resolution I heard from an environmentalist last week? There's a load of tips. One of them was the three rule. In other words, when you're going out for your walk, try and pick up three pieces of litter that you, if you see them, and deposit them in the nearest bin. And that would make, if everyone did that was going out for a walk, would make.
But by the way, you're
doing the work of a lot of people there yesterday, Joseph. And
without cutting across you there, Joe. If you have your coffee cup in one hand and your mobile phone in the other hand while you're walking, then there isn't much chance of picking up anything.
Okay. Hopefully they don't pick up a signal. That might help them concentrate on their rubbish, Joe. And then they have the dog with them as well. Now, you say all the dog poo. I know it was bagged. But someone helped. I presume you put on a pair of gloves before you, or you have a.
An
item.
Joe, I was brought up and reared, to respect dirt, but don't be afraid of it.
Okay.
Put your nose into it there.
Well done.
But maybe with your help there, I'd probably get a good eating out of some people who will say, mind your own business.
No, they won't. But if they do say that, Joseph, they're wrong.
I'm long enough on the go now not to take an awful lot of notice. Yeah. But as I say, I would respect your viewers or your listeners' opinion and ask me, why does this happen?
Okay. Joe Mellett in Sligo, thanks indeed. Joe@rt.ie 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And back to Mark Freeran's powerful intervention about codeine addiction and his awful experience on the job. He still has, and thankfully he's in recovery and continuing. Bernie, good afternoon. Bernie, you're a pharmacist technician.
I am, Joe.
And what's your situation and your opinion, Bernie, please?
Okay, I was just took issue with the doctor that was on there, and he's saying that when he goes into pharmacies, he never gets asked the questions and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The onus shouldn't be on the girl behind the counter to determine whether to sell these products or not. Like 9 times out of 10, Joe, the girl behind the counter is a young girl. Sometimes they're just out of school, or they're a part-time worker, or they're in college or whatever. The pharmacist is unable to supervise every single sale of codeine.
Okay.
It's just not possible. Pharmacies are under huge pressure. Still this time of the year, this is flu season, cold and flu season. They're up to their eyeballs. They're encouraged to give vaccines to people. We have people walking in now for vaccines. They didn't get them before Christmas, didn't get the flu. There's a big upsurge in the flu. They're walking in. We're saying, yes, absolutely, you can have the flu vaccine. Take a seat. It's 15 minutes. They have to sit there. Then they have to be brought in. It's just not possible for a pharmacist to supervise every single codeine sale. So therefore, the onus then is on the girl, 9 times out of 10.
Or the man.
Or the boy behind the counter. So the onus should be on the HSE. Like, this debate's going on for so long
now. To what? The HSE to what? To do what?
To put them on prescription only.
So that means it's a packet of salbutamol, which even Dr. Cahill admitted has its analgesic uses, obviously limited in terms of amount. You should try. A packet of salbutamol will go from €14 to €74 if you pay the below average doctor's fee of €60 to get a prescription.
Well, I'm just saying from experience.
That's the end of that. Maybe that's what people want. That's the end of Salpidine and Nurofen Plus and Maxidine.
There are
Phenolic
other analgesics, Joe, but there are other products.
But they're not as powerful. People buy them because they're. People buy them, but people don't buy them because they're addictive. They buy them because they're powerful.
Yeah, they buy them because they're powerful, but they are addictive. And like, there's lots of other addictive medicines out there. And they're all on prescription.
Okay.
Like every single one of them are on prescription. Any sleeping tablet, anything like that, your Xanax, all of those products.
Well,
on an
average day,
the
Bernie,
only thing
as I say, the HSE said we sell 5 million packets of these a year. So that's a lot of money.
Well,
how popular are they in terms of the turnover of a chemist on a daily basis?
Huge. Absolutely huge. That's what I'm saying. And it's just impossible. Like the doctor that was on there was saying, like, the pharmacist should be supervising. It's impossible for a pharmacist to supervise every single sale.
Yeah.
So therefore, the questions don't get asked. And if they get asked, it's like I would always say to somebody, it's only for 3 days. There is codeine in it. Codeine is addictive.
Yeah,
people know that.
Yeah,
they're buying
them
all the time. We are actually told, do not get into confrontation with people.
Ah.
If people want those, and you start questioning them and saying, well, actually, you bought a packet off me the other day, and I can't sell them to you.
What are you accusing me of? Aggressive. Yeah.
What do you do then? We are told, do not get into confrontation. It's
okay.
Not worth it. They want the product. It's there for sale. Just sell it to them.
Okay,
so this
point,
argument is going on all the time. There was a primetime program on there, was there a couple of years ago, about this huge codeine addiction. And they keep putting the onus back on pharmacies all the time, on pharmacies, that they
good
should
point,
be the
yeah,
one controlling
yeah.
this. And it's just not possible. And I just don't think it's fair on pharmacies to put the responsibility onto them. If they feel strongly enough about it, they should just put them on.
But I just wonder now, I know GDPR and all this, Mark made a suggestion that when you're buying, there should be certain products, over-the-counter products, that when you buy them in a pharmacy, they should say, show us your PPS card. So
yeah,
it's numbered. So in other words, you go into, but there's no central computer base.
No,
is there?
And they were saying
there isn't
all
even,
that before that.
There isn't even in
the
hospitals, yeah.
Or something like that. It's just not going to happen, Joe, for GDPR and all of those reasons. It's just not going to happen, you know.
So the health of the nation should be subservient to GDPR.
Well, I don't know what the solution is. I just don't know. I know people want them. They are effective.
Yeah.
But there are other analgesics that you can buy over the counter. Like, you can buy a combination of like anti-inflammatories and paracetamol that will work really well with people. You don't have to have the codeine.
Yeah, but it's a paracetamol, and it's a paracetamol that heads straight for your stomach.
Well, it's the overdosing.
Yeah,
you see what happens
if
you take it too much because of the codeine, and then the paracetamol affects the liver. That's the problem. But you can, you know, treat pain in other ways.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be codeine-based. It's unfortunate that people are just going straight to the salt.
Now, Bernie, just to go back to our initial call, does your pharmacy take back unused medicines, unused prescription drugs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you do with them? Do you know what happens?
We have a bin.
Okay.
And they go into the bin.
Where does the bin go?
Well, it gets taken away by one of these waste companies and it's disposed of. I think it's all incinerated.
Yeah, but you have to pay for that.
We have to pay for that. But it is a service we offer.
Okay.
You know, all pharmacies will do that. It is
no,
service.
They don't. All pharmacies don't do it, Bernie.
Oh, well, I think they're supposed to.
No, they're
but
not.
Anyway,
the HSE say people can check with their pharmacy to see if they accept unused or unwanted. So you're doing a great public service there.
We do that, but we don't. I think there's an issue around like people bringing back syringes and stuff like that. There's a huge cost to getting rid of those. But for prescription medicines, yeah, absolutely, we take them all back. We just put them in the bin and then they get taken away by the...
And would you take back, I don't know whether you have to go through, do you take back stuff that's bought in health food shops that people have no longer any use for?
Not generally.
You know,
we don't,
herbal
like,
this and herbal that.
We just get bags of stuff back and you just take it back. We take it back. We don't always go through the bag. Like, often you'll find that somebody's deceased and usually they're, like,
yeah,
they've been
course,
a
yeah.
in the pharmacy or whatever, and a family member will come back with a bag of stuff and we just take it back. We don't always get a chance to go through it first. So, yeah, there could be stuff like that, you know.
Okay.
Okay,
Bernie. Anyway. Thanks indeed, and for everyone who works in pharmacies, thank you for your service. joe@rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Fiona Dolan is in Cavan. Fiona, good afternoon. You're listening to this discussion about addiction to over-the-counter medicines containing codeine. What's your situation, Fiona, please?
Hiya, Joe. Yeah, I have a torn rotator cuff in my right shoulder. And,
okay, very painful.
I've about 15 years now. So I have used Nurofen Plus on and off over those 15 years to deal with pain. And I know the pharmacist technician was saying about there's other mixtures of drugs take, but nothing works for me as good as Nurofen Plus.
Okay.
But the GP said, I was very surprised at the GP saying that about, you know, no one's ever asked him
okay.
the question.
Well, what's your, well that's one person's experience. What's your experience, Fiona?
I all the time. Every pharmacist has always questioned me about what did I need it for? Was I aware it was addictive? And the 3 days rule. I've even had pharmacists in Cavan Town come out and discuss with me the situation. You know, and I'm very aware of the addictive side of coding because of those pharmacists and people working in pharmacists. So that's why I was a bit surprised that she was never asked.
Okay, well, you're telling your story, which is very different. I'm sure everyone's story can be different. But Fiona, can you not get a prescription if the pain is that severe? Can your GP not recommend a prescriptive drug?
I have been prescribed sulpidine, diphene, cocodamol, various different drugs over the years, and just none of them work for me as well as Nurofen Plus.
And do you?
Don't know why.
Okay. Do you? I don't want to be recommending Andy, and I'm not recommending it. But do you tell your GP?
Yes.
And what does he or she or they say?
It's the same kind of situation in that. Well, if that works for you, and it for whatever reason it seems to be the only thing that works for you, but I am also, as I said, very well educated by the pharmacist to know how.
Okay, it sounds like it. And tell us about how would you know, or how do you check that it's not getting out of control?
Is this a situation where the personal responsibility comes into it a bit, you know, because we are made aware that it is addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I said to your researcher there, I will literally only take it when I am pure desperate because I am so aware of the addictive.
Okay, so is there a bar that you have in your own body, so to speak, where you say, if I go above this certain bar, I will take it, but below it, I won't. What is that bar, if any?
You're talking maybe 3 nights with no sleep because of pain.
Okay.
3 or 4 nights and then that's it. I just pure desperate need to sleep.
But you have a gateway. You say, unless
I
lose sleep, unless I can't sleep for 3 nights in a row.
Yeah, I'm not taking it because, as I said, the pharmacists, the people who work in the pharmacy have all made me very aware of it. I know what where it can go, listening to Mark, where it can go to, which is really bad. But there has to be some. I don't agree with the putting it on prescription because I don't want to have to go. We all know how hard it is to get an appointment with a GP these days. So if I haven't had 4 nights sleep, the last thing I need is to wait to see a GP to then get a prescription to be able to take painkillers. So I don't agree with that, putting it on prescription. And it does work. It does work. But
it is proven to be addictive.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But
you have to be very cautious.
The situation is never going to be solved because it's unworkable, I suppose, in whichever way for people from all different situations. But, you know, it does work and you have to be responsible. And the pharmacists are doing a good job.
Stay with us, Fiona, and join in if you wish with Derek. Derek, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Don't mention the exact product if you wouldn't mind, Derek, please.
Okay.
But you have arthritis and you find some of these over-the-counter codeine-based products are good.
They're very good, very good. And I've tried all different types of painkillers, and basically they're the only ones that work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But my suggestion was to get the pharmacies to get the patient to fill in a questionnaire when they're buying them, so that it takes the onus away from the individual pharmacist, okay. and you know, standardized questions that they fill in on a form and sign it, and then okay. the record is kept, yeah. you know, because it can be very embarrassing.
But would that not be a disadvantage for people? And I know people seldom see this, but it is 11% of the population can't write.
They could ask for help. But I mean, the pharmacies are very.
Okay, you say maybe a simple form or a card. Could you just fill that out for me?
Exactly.
It's just another little barrier, and it would have more of a, pardon the pun, a placebo effect. In other words, you're saying to somebody, "I can't." People know you can't. You can't stop them buying it. But this is just another little. Maybe that's worth considering, Derek. I think it is very simple. Very simple. I know GDPR statements warning us all to not to do it. Okay, Derek, good to meet you. Paul Mernock is in sound. Shane Galvin is the BCO. Tara Lockery, Grant producer. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.